Welcome to Changing Futures, the podcast aimed at helping Birmingham's most vulnerable people live more fulfilled lives. In this series, we'll explore the importance of lived experience when working with people in the areas of homelessness, substance misuse, mental health, and reoffending. Acknowledging the link between trauma and later behaviour, how these issues can affect any one of us, but that some individuals are more at risk than others. We'll hear from those whose lives have been greatly improved by the work of Birmingham Changing Futures Together and learn how those people have been let down in the past by the services and systems set up to help them. The series will explore the multiple and complex, often unmet needs of individuals and focus on the benefits of lived experience in service design and delivery and collaboration. In this episode, we focus primarily on mental health and complex needs, hearing from two of our experts by experience who had to navigate their way through multiple agencies with limited success until their involvement with Birmingham Changing Futures Together.
If somebody breaks a leg, you know what to do, you know what the end point is. Mm. Now with us, it's not a straight treatment decision. It's up and down, round about, back and forth, snakes and ladders, the whole works. It's, you know, and there is no time limit. There is no definition of what is a cure.
What's happened to you, not what's wrong with you, needs to be the question. And I think any practitioner or any GP needs to be ready to have it all given to them. People in crisis don't need a superhero. They just need someone to come in and tell them they're going to be all right.
Phil experienced both severe depression and substance misuse. This is his story.
Well, for me, it started when I was a kid. But when I was about 10, my mum was a very sort of nervous sort of person. She was a hypochondriac, used to live on eating paracetamol and aspirin to get rid of his phantom complaints. And in that of doing that, she gave herself an ulcer. So one Tuesday, I came home from school to find my mum bleeding out in the kitchen floor. So it was a bit traumatic. No, she got took to hospital, very tragic, and died during the night.
I'm so sorry to hear that.
Well, my father took it very well. Next day, I come home and find my father had committed suicide.
Oh, Phil.
The family we moved into, well, no, fed as well, clothed as. But, no, it wasn't the warmest of families. I was never felt to be, that I was good enough. I was always being reminded if it wasn't for the kindness of the foster parents, I wouldn't have a roof over them. Where would you be then? Looking back now, I probably had post-traumatic stress disorder or something like that, which was never, ever treated. So what did I do? I retreated back into the unknown world of books, because that's what I like doing, and then I didn't have to deal with people.
Phil continued with this coping strategy of throwing himself into work and keeping people at arm's length for pretty much the next 40 years, until the pressure became too much.
Well, it got to the point where I'd been particularly productive for years. I was sort of getting old and things were starting to fall to pieces. I was having problems with my health. The pressure of work was really getting to me. Because so much was being loaded onto me that I was working 7 days a week, 18 hours a day. And it got a situation, the place where I was working, where they were making redundancies. And so it was about a 2-year period I was fighting every day for my job. And where I'd been keeping a lid on, you know, I was coping with the depression and I was coping with the anxiety. I suddenly wasn't. And of course, no. Being in a big butch world, do you go and ask for help? No, you don't, because it would have been a sign of weakness. And your thinking is, that'll push you up the list to near against that. It'll give them an excuse. And even when I did go to get help, there wasn't really any help coming. And eventually I was made redundant. And it's the same old story. What does somebody do at the age of 58 who've done one thing all their life? Who was I? What was I going to do? So what did I do? I'd always self-medicated, liked a drink or two. I'd never considered myself to be an alcoholic, but things were always better when I'd had a drink. You know, I sort of drifted, and the more I drifted, the more I started looking into myself. drank a bit more. All those things about low self-esteem. You lost that job because you were never good enough. So I was drinking, piled on weight. And I came to this plan. It was going to be a certain amount of time because it was something I wanted to do. And then I was going to kill myself. And that day arrived. 437 paracetamol tablets later. And, well, fortunately, unfortunately, a neighbour found me. I ended up in the QE. Eventually was sanctioned. I was stuck in a hospital for 6 months. But that was my first encounter with the mental health system. I was really in that sort of state where I didn't really care whether I was alive or dead.
And what changed?
Well, actually, it was anger more than anything else. Watching the way the whole system worked. And it all wasn't working. And eventually, there was a psychologist who actually sat me down and let me tell my tale. And that was the first time I'd ever, there was only about four people in the world knew about my childhood trauma. Literally, after four sessions, it was deemed that I was well. I was no longer a threat to myself. So see you, bye, at an hour's notice. And ended up halfway through a session with a psychologist, being bundled on a taxi on my own. And found myself in a respite house. It got me so annoyed how people were coming in and out of hospital, and been coming in and out of hospital for years. The sound I remember from being in a mental hospital is actually the sound of people snoring, because most of them are doped up to the eyeballs to be kept quiet, not treated, sedated, so they don't cause a problem. Now, there was no occupational health. If you were lucky, you saw a psychologist. It was supposed to be once a week, but it was usually more like once a fortnight, again, if you were lucky.
Phil was out of hospital but unable to adjust until services under the Birmingham Changing Futures Together umbrella stepped in to support him through his recovery.
I'd closed down, wasn't interacting with the world. At that point, I couldn't even walk down the street and get a cup of coffee. My goal for every day was, once I'd got the section conditions of being linked to it, so I could get 15 minutes outside, then half an hour, is actually to make it to the coffee shop. That was my sense of normality. Some days I could do it, some days I couldn't. And it was actually something from Birmingham Mind came in and actually took me to a coffee shop. Said, yeah, that's not scary, is it? And every day it was something like a real activity to get me out of the house. And then what she said to me, we've got this thing called Every Step of the Way going on in the office. I think you'd be good at it. She'd recognise what I wanted was, how was I going to get back to the person I was? So it was coming to something like Every Step of the Way. It suddenly gave me a focus.
What form did that take? What were you doing with Every Step of the Way?
Well, actually, first thing it did, it got me into a room with people who weren't judging. My past was never going to be brought up. And because it's full of people who've all had mental health issues, some have had drink and drugs problems, all that had felt the same, that shame you feel, that isolation you feel, but had turned the corner, but wanted to do something. You were never judged, because when we tell our war stories, we'd all done equally stupid things, or things that you hear that should never have ever done. So it gave me that level of acceptance where you could then be teased back into the world.
So where does Phil think experts by experience could be well used in the area of mental health?
A lot of my problems was the stress that built up at work. And looking back now, it was pretty obvious I was struggling. The place where I worked, it was pretty obvious. There was people I called friends who had been to suicide because of stress at work. The number of people off on the sick, on the stress, people who were, you know, drinking their pressures away. And this is a big place that employs 4,000 people. Everybody knew what was happening, but nobody would actually take the responsibility of actually taking the problem on, because it seemed hard. So right from that awareness of firms having people who are trained to spot people having problems, who have the absolute guts to go and say, are you sure you're okay? Because that's another thing we all say. Whenever he says, how are you doing today? Oh, I'm fine. Because in some days, when you're feeling like we were, my fine was, well, I'm not going to jump off something high in the next half hour. We'll see what we like at 5 o'clock, sort of. That was my idea of fine. Getting people like me, peer supporters, because sometimes all you need is a chat.
Soon, Phil was getting involved and helping others in ways he'd never have previously imagined.
The best thing that's happened to me this year was actually we'd done a play of a Mac where a group of us, we created a story about somebody coming in and out of prison. Not that that's ever happened to me, but it's about that transitions. And so I told my story about depression, gave a bit of a rap, because it was all about the multiple disadvantages day, about seeing the full picture, because everybody, whether it's the kids sitting outside Waitrose, the guy in the park bench with a booze, there's always a story why they've ended up there. And it's not always because there's wasters, it's trauma, tragedy, something has happened. So we gave this story about it. And I was sitting on the bus coming in. And actually somebody came down and sat next to me and said, God, it's so inspiring. I thought, oh, God. And there's actually somebody had seen that. And because they'd seen us do something, now he went to the doctors and got a diagnosis. But also, it's about spreading that idea to professionals that, yeah, we understand there's pressure on budgets and things and time, and there's not a lot of, yeah. We're asking the question, what can we do to help the system? Because that's the way we get back to where we were, because we don't want anybody to suffer what we've suffered. But what it's actually about is small things. When I talk about it, I always use the butterfly transforming sort of analogy. It's about sort of getting people to think about why are they doing something? Is it really working? What are they doing things for? We're doing some work with the DWP, which is the great bastion of doom to most people, and you hear horror stories every day. But what we can actually go in, we've been working with a couple of job centres, and actually go in, talking to the frontline staff, the bouncers on the front door, he said, do you realise what it's like for somebody who's got chronic depression just to get on a bus to get here?
I wanted to know from Phil and Mandy how service providers could better serve people with mental health problems and other multiple and complex needs.
It's amazing when you are in that point where you need help, especially my journey. My journey started probably from the age of two, really. I was born into trauma. And I found, if I was talking to a professional, you'd have the opinion like, don't tell me that because I can't help you with that. Because I had too many people in my life all at the same time, all for different things. Yeah. And sometimes when I was talking to a counsellor, I might not want to be talking about my trauma. I might want to be talking about the domestic violence, the sexual violence, my substance misuse, or that actually life is pretty shit at the moment. I'm not coping. But that person doesn't want to know about that. They want to... They're designed just to deal with that. Mm. So every day I would have to be talking about something different to that particular worker, and it doesn't work.
Yeah. If somebody breaks a leg, you know what to do. You know what the end point is. Mm. Even complicated diseases like cancer, you know what the end point is, how you get there. Now with us, it's not a straight treatment decision. It's up and down, round about, back and forth, snakes and rattles. The whole works. And there is no time limit. And again, there is no definition of what is a cure.
Yeah, well, trauma-informed practice is another one I'm really a big advocate for, because, one, I think if we can start implementing in regards to medical fronts, all service providers, staff and private services, trauma-informed care, we're going to save the government millions of pounds. And I mean, that is like from first point of call, what's happened to you? Yeah. I found in me, eventually, when I started talking about my story and having that one consistent person in my life at the time, that helped. Instead of keep telling my story all the time, to talk about my story, what's happened to me, and sort of move on from that, really. I'm not saying recovery was easy from that point, but it certainly enabled me to be a bit stronger day by day. You need someone to stand up for your rights.
Yeah.
Because I think when you're going through crisis, right, and everything falls apart, and, I mean, like the suicide, even when I was in recovery, my suicide thoughts didn't leave me for a good 12 months after I put down the drugs.
Yeah.
I really do think you need a certain worker who will sit and navigate through for you and let you know exactly what's going on.
How much do you think helping other people has helped you see what you need and help yourself?
This time last year, I was a gibbering wreck. Just getting on a bus, just going into a coffee shop and buying a coffee was about the limit that I could do in any one day. The thought that I could go into a room of straight and talk, no, couldn't do it. Doing something like this, wouldn't have even dreamt it possible.
Mm.
Now, just coming back from talking at a national conference, I'm going, when's the next one? But this time last year, I would never have ever even dreamt I could do that. I wouldn't even have wanted to do that. I would have been quite happy in my misery, sitting in my flat, listening to music, reading my books, and probably would have gone to the bad old ways, and tablets would have been involved at some point. It's that whole idea now. My life has changed. But I've probably done more good in the last year than in 40 years of the career I had before.
Mm.
But what is the biggest thing now? In the past, when I wasn't helping myself, the biggest thing that's changed around it is me.
Yeah.
And that's the message you have to give to anybody, because you sit there in your mope going, I can't change, this is me, look what I've made. Guilt, 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 you battered, this is all you deserve. Actually, you can change.
I can only reflect what Phil says. The person who's changed is me, and doing what I'm doing today with the volunteering, the presentations, I am no longer ashamed or guilty about my past.
Yeah.
It's helped me forgive myself for, you know, letting my children down, especially because I remember times when I'd have a sleep down with a baby who's like 9 months old, crawling, falling asleep on the settee. I have had to forgive myself for those times. But it's been through this, I am today forgiving myself, realise I'm not on my own, and connection is massive as well, being involved with a group of people with all similar, well, different experiences, but similar outcomes. But I've changed, and I do have a story to tell, and I can help others. All services need to use people with lived experiences. I mean, I know people who've come through this service that I'm with today, who are now in full-time work, who's doing massive, brilliantly, you know, using their lived experience to help others, and they're the ones who make a difference. I really do think even statutory organisations, like local authorities, justice systems, all of that need people with lived experience in their organisation as paid members of staff, going out to work alongside someone who knows the textbook, somebody who can do the one-to-one support, working together for a better result.
Thank you to Phil and Mandy for their valuable contribution to this podcast. In our next episode, we hear Mandy's story in full as we discuss substance abuse and complex needs and how lived experience has impacted positively on her recovery. Thank you for listening to Changing Futures, the podcast aimed at helping Birmingham's most vulnerable people live more fulfilled lives.